Welcome to SCOTUScast, Foreign Surveillance and Standing to Sue Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On February 26, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Clapper v. Amnesty International USA. This case concerns Congress's 2008 amendment to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, which created a new framework under which the government may seek judicial authorization of certain foreign intelligence surveillance targeting the communications of non-U.S. persons located abroad. The question before the court was whether U.S. groups and individuals who contend that the 2008 amendments violate a number of constitutional provisions have standing to bring their challenge in court. In an opinion delivered by Justice Alito, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that the challengers had not demonstrated sufficient present or impending injury fairly traceable to the 2008 FISA amendments to establish standing to sue. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia, Kennedy, and Thomas joined Justice Alito's opinion. Justice Breyer filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justices Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. To discuss the case, we have Benjamin Powell, who is a partner at WilmerHale. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Powell.
On February 26th of this year, 2013, the Supreme Court decided an important case in the area of national security. The title of the case was Clapper v. Amnesty International, Clapper referring to James Clapper, the current director of national intelligence, who was sued by a number of organizations, activists, non-governmental organizations, and lawyers, challenging the FISA Amendments Act of 2008, a specific provision of that act, specifically Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978, as added by the FISA Amendments Act of 2008. The specific provision that plaintiffs challenged in this case authorized the targeting by the intelligence community of people who were reasonably believed to be located outside the United States, who were not U.S. citizens, for the purpose of gathering foreign intelligence. These authorizations would last up to 1 year upon approval of the FISA court of various procedures, including review by the FISA court that the activities of the government complied with the Fourth Amendment. The respondents in this case, the plaintiffs below, were attorneys and human rights, labor, legal, and media organizations whose work allegedly required them to engage in sensitive and sometimes privileged telephone and email communications with colleagues, clients, sources, and other individuals located abroad. The plaintiffs claimed that some of the people with whom they were exchanging foreign intelligence information were likely to be targets of surveillance under the new provision of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Specifically, their claims included that they communicated by telephone and email with people that the U.S. government was likely to believe or believed to be associated with terrorist organizations, people located in geographic areas that are a special focus of the government's counterterrorism or diplomatic efforts, and activists who oppose governments that are supported by the United States government. The organizations claimed that the new amendment to FISA compromised their ability to locate witnesses, cultivate sources, obtain information, and communicate confidential information to their clients. They also asserted that they had ceased engaging in certain telephone and email conversations. According to plaintiffs, the threat of the surveillance would compel them to travel abroad in order to have in-person conversations, and in addition, they claimed that they had undertaken costly and burdensome measures to protect the confidentiality of their sensitive communication. In proceedings below, the district court found that plaintiffs had no standing. That was appealed to the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, which found that the plaintiffs did have standing to challenge the constitutionality of the FISA Amendments Act. The case was denied en banc review. However, there were both strong opinions supporting the finding of the panel of the Second Circuit that there was standing, and very strong dissents that, in fact, plaintiffs did not have standing. Not surprisingly, the United States decided to appeal this case to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court accepted certiorari on it. The case was argued on October 29th of 2012. In the proceedings below, the Second Circuit found that the plaintiffs had standing because they could establish that they have an injury, in fact, because there is, quote, an objectively reasonable likelihood that their communications would be acquired under Section 702. The Supreme Court found that the plaintiff's theory of future injury was too speculative to meet the requirements of standing and overturned the decision of the Second Circuit. The court found that the plaintiff's theory of future injury was simply too speculative to meet the requirement of standing that a threatened injury must be, quote, certainly impending. To summarize the reasoning of the court found that while the plaintiffs asserted that they could establish injury in fact because there was, quote, in the words of the Second Circuit, an objectively reasonable likelihood that their communications would be required under Section 702 at some point in the future, the court found that their theory of future injury was simply too speculative to satisfy the requirements of standing that a threatened injury must be certainly impending. The Supreme Court went on to find that even if the plaintiffs could demonstrate that their threatened injury is certainly impending, they would still not be able to establish that their injury was actually traceable to Section 702 of FISA. As for the plaintiffs' arguments that they were suffering a present injury because the risk that their communications would be subject to surveillance forced them to take currently costly and burdensome measures to protect the confidentiality of their international communications, the court found that a plaintiff could not manufacture standing by choosing itself to make expenditures based on a hypothetical future harm that was not certainly impending. The court therefore held that the plaintiffs lacked Article III standing. In addition, the court noted that even if an injury was certainly impending, the plaintiffs could not show that that injury was traceable to the specific provision of FISA. Going into more detail in the court's reasoning on standing, the court noted that Article III of the Constitution limits federal court's jurisdiction to cases and controversies. And as the court put it, no principle is more fundamental to the judiciary's proper role in our system of government than the constitutional limitation of federal court jurisdiction to actual cases or controversy. The court elaborated on standing and noted that their standing inquiry in the past has been especially rigorous when reaching the merits of a dispute that would force the court to decide whether an action taken by one of the other two branches of the federal government was unconstitutional. Here, the plaintiffs had brought a facial challenge claiming that Section 702 of FISA was unconstitutional and asked the court to strike it down. The court noted that relaxation of standing requirements was directly related to an expansion of judicial power, and that the court had often found a lack of standing in cases which the judiciary has been requested to review actions of the political branches in the fields of intelligence gathering and foreign affairs. In further discussing the plaintiff's argument on standing, the court noted that plaintiff's argument rested on a highly speculative fear of at least 5 points. First, that the government would decide that to target communications of non-U.S. persons with whom the plaintiffs communicate. Second, that the government would actually choose to invoke its authority under Section 702 of FISA rather than utilizing another method of surveillance available to the government. Third, that Article III judges who serve on the FISA court would conclude that the government's proposed surveillance procedures satisfy the many safeguards contained in the Act and are consistent with the Fourth Amendment. Fourth, that the government would actually succeed in intercepting the communications of the plaintiff's contacts. And fifth, that plaintiffs would be parties to particular communications that the government intercepts. As the court put it, this relied on a highly attenuated chain of possibilities and did not satisfy the requirement that a threatened injury must be certainly impending. As for the plaintiff's claim that they could establish standing based on the measures they are currently taking, the court said that that argument fared no better. The plaintiff's claim, for example, that the threat of surveillance sometimes compels them to avoid certain email and phone conversations, to tack in generalities rather than specifics, or travel so they could have in-person communications, were choices that the plaintiffs had made that would not allow them to establish standing simply by asserting that they are making these expenditures based on what the court found were speculative future threats of harm. The court noted that the Second Circuit's analysis improperly allowed plaintiffs to establish standing by simply asserting that they suffer present costs and burdens that are based on a fear of surveillance, so long as that fear, in the words of the Second Circuit, was not fanciful, paranoid, or otherwise unreasonable. The Supreme Court said that that improperly watered down the fundamental requirements of Article III for standing. To put it another way, the court said, plaintiffs cannot manufacture standing merely by inflicting harm on themselves through these expenditures based on their fears of hypothetical future harm that is not certainly impending. Finally, plaintiffs argued that they should be held to have standing because otherwise the constitutionality of Section 702 of FISA could not be challenged. I should note that this was an argument that gained some notice in the press as being an argument with merit. The court noted, however, that they have never found that somebody should have standing because else no one would have standing, and that was not a reason to find that somebody has standing. Second, and perhaps more importantly, the court noted that that argument, even if it were to be accepted, was simply not true, that no one would have standing to obtain review of Section 702 of FISA. The FISA Amendments Act of 2008 created a comprehensive scheme in which the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court evaluated the government's procedures under the act, including assessing whether these procedures comport with the Fourth Amendment. Any dissatisfaction, the court noted, that plaintiffs may have about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court's ruling or the congressional delineation of the court's role which is irrelevant to the standing analysis. Additionally, the court noted that, in fact, there were a number of ways under which the statute could be subject to judicial review. First, if the government intended to use or disclose information obtained under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act amendments, the government would need to provide advance notice of its intent to use that information, and an effective person may challenge the lawfulness of the acquisitions under the statute. Finally, the court noted that any electronic communication service provider the government directs to assist in surveillance may challenge the lawfulness of the directive before the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. The court noted, in fact, that there had been challenges brought to a predecessor of this FISA Amendments Act of 2008, a statute called the Protect America Act of 2007. I should also note that the fact that the statute is not being challenged if it were to intercept someone's communications is partially a result of the fact that perhaps clients of the plaintiffs in this case have chosen not to visit the United States, perhaps in fact because they would be subject to arrest possibly if they're involved in terrorism activities. And of course, if they were arrested and this type of evidence were introduced against them, they would have standing to challenge it under the Fourth Amendment. The case was decided on a 5-4 basis. Justice Alito wrote the opinion, joined by Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Scalia, Justice Kennedy, and Justice Thomas. Justice Breyer filed a dissent, joined by Justices Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. In dissent, Justice Breyer found that the plaintiff's standing depended upon the likelihood that the government would harm them by intercepting at least some of their private foreign telephone or email conversations. Justice Breyer expressed the view that the harm was not speculative, and indeed, as he put it, it is likely to take place as are most future events that common sense inference and ordinary knowledge of human nature tell us would happen. He said that the court had often found the occurrence of similar future events sufficiently certain to support standing. Justice Breyer cited several considerations based on the record, along with what he called common sense inferences, that convinced him that there was a very high likelihood that the government acting under this FISA authority would intercept at least some of the communications just described. And in his view, there was a sufficient degree of standing necessary to support standing here based on the government's interests and types of clients that plaintiffs claim they had. This case was a very significant challenge decided on a 5-4 vote in the Supreme Court. The intelligence community has repeatedly expressed publicly and to Congress the importance of the FISA Amendments Act of 2008 and the authorities it provided to the intelligence community to protect the country against the possibility of future terrorist attack. This case was very significant in eliminating an ongoing challenge to that authority and some uncertainty around the constitutionality of the act. It remains to be seen whether evidence gathered under Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act will actually be introduced in a future criminal trial, which could give rise to a specific as-applied challenge under the Fourth Amendment, a case that would be watched with intense interest if ever brought.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.